a group of people that really do live close to nature in where I was born are the Amish. You probably know about the Amish community, a strict order of Mennonites who don't want anything to do with electricity, basically. And I was on my way down here for my last search committee meeting. Dave Nelson's back. He was on that search committee. Right after I moved here, moved up to Maryland, so it's good to see him. But we had a meeting at Katie Van Brackel's house, and knowing that she had some boys, I thought would be a nice thing on my way to the airport to get them something. So I got them a Hershey bar, right? That's Pennsylvania's best export. And I also grabbed them a postcard of an Amish horse and buggy, just because there are a lot of Amish folks in and around that part of the state where I'm from. And I came that night to the Van Brackels, and Vernon and Peggy Keene came in, it was a potluck dinner. And they brought dessert, and in came this beautiful two-layer cake with lots of whipped cream and all the stuff that I like the most, all topped. And they brought that in. And by the way, when we went to do the dessert, we went to cut it, and it was a brick. Peggy had played a joke on everybody. There was a brick under all of that. That was dessert that night. We're sitting on the steps of the Van Brackel home, me and the two boys, and we're having a conversation. So I give them the Hershey bars. And then I said, and plus I have postcards to show you kind of where I'm from. And they're looking at the horse and buggy. They'd never seen this before. And I think Davey was the youngest at the time, maybe about 5 or 4. And he said, who are these people? Why don't they ride cars? Why don't they have electricity? And then they looked at me and they said, do you have a car? Living close to nature and inspired by the glorious view from Pike's Peak, Catherine Lee Bates at the end of the 19th century wrote a song you know well about spacious skies, about amber waves of grain and the majesty of purple mountains and gleaming alabaster cities, fruited plains. Another song from the same century says of the country, I love thy rocks and rills, thy woods and templed hills, and I long for that day when freedom rings from every mountainside and from all the trees. Those national songs swell my heart. I don't know about yours. They remind me of an Ansel Adams photograph in black and white of the American West, or maybe some of those images you have saved on your cell phones of favorite beautiful sunsets or places that you love. You and I are blessed to live in a beautiful place. When you fly up and out of Atlanta, you look down and you see green. Not every city's like that, is it? It's just absolutely beautiful. We're a tree city, according to the Arbor Society. We have parks and we have bike paths and we have not far to go to the trailhead of 2,000 miles that takes you all the way up to Maine. We live close to beautiful lakes. We have fish-filled streams and creeks. We enjoy not far away two different bodies of salt water. I'm going to get to 30A, Jack. I'm going to get there sometime. I live in this city, and I look out when I work in my sermons over a floodplain, which means there are no houses back there at that part of my neighborhood. It's across Fauxkiller Creek. It's about 5 or 7 acres out that study window. And it's tranquil, and it's tree canopied, and it's home to fish and turtles and squirrel and occasionally a heron or a deer or a fox or a rabbit. There are water snakes out there, but they usually don't last till March, because there are also hawks that patrol it. And if I can see the water snakes, I know those hawks can see them. I was walking the other night, walking a dog on a cool breeze evening, and saw in my neighborhood my favorite tree, a hemlock. Such a beautiful place where we live. Annie Dillard and Pilgrim at Tinkler Creek said, after the one extravagant gesture of creation in the first place, the universe continues to deal with extravagances. When you walk, she says, take large strides. then you can feel the planet's roundness under your feet. I'm convinced that the right and the good and the just thing don't just happen on earth. If they just happened on earth, God wouldn't need to intervene. God wouldn't call you and I to be engaged in the world. Instead, God's people are called to enter in for the good of life and the renewal of life and the abundance of life. With regard to the natural world, which is our home, the earth, the waters, the air, our life depends upon its health. Let us not take it for granted. Maybe some of you heard what I did on the radio not too long ago. In the Pacific Ocean, there is this flotilla of plastic, mostly debris, garbage, about, they think, 9 feet deep. And they think in the Pacific it's twice the size of Texas, that much floating plastic. One projection I saw said that our world's oceans will soon have more plastic than fish. There's a reason we give out gifts to visitors. It isn't just to get the name of the church out there. It's to not use plastic as much. Grocery, shopping bags. We want to preserve and work for a world that we enjoy, yes, but one which will be cared for so that future generations will have the pleasure of picking blueberries, strawberries, apples, and peaches. Enjoy penguins on ice caps and maples turning bright orange and tulips and azaleas producing abundantly. Our faith, of course, is that God is the giver of every good and perfect gift, that we don't worship the gift, we worship the one who gives. And in honor of that gift, we enjoy the gift, we give thanks for the gift, but we must care for it, we must tend it, we must steward it. It's not ours, it's God's. The Genesis story says that God put Adam and Eve to live in a garden. In addition to being fruitful and multiplying, God said to have dominion over all of plant life and all of animal life. Dominion. What is dominion? Eugene Peterson, in his translation, The Message, says dominion is to be responsible for. I was at my neighborhood swimming pool a few years ago, and a teenage girl, probably 12 or 14, somewhere in there, jumped into the waters to be with her friends. And I was probably reading in the shade somewhere as my kids were swimming at another corner of the pool. And her friend said, "Dude, what are you doing? Don't bring your cell phone into the pool." And she gets out of the water and she starts to dry it off a little bit in her suit. She goes, "If it breaks, my parents will get me another one." I heard a Hindu boy come home from school and say to his parents, "Don't Christians teach that it's bad to throw away food?" And his mother said, "Why? I'm sure they do teach that you shouldn't waste food." He said, "Then why do all my friends who are Christian throw out all their leftover food? They waste so much food." Is it any surprise the U.S. is the number one trash-producing country in the world per person? The average American throws out 1,600 pounds of garbage a year. I don't know how much I throw at it exactly, but I'm told 3/4 of the average American's garbage is actually doesn't have to go to the landfill. It could be directed and composted so that the landfills, our 1,900 landfills, don't fill up as fast. See, God is the gracious giver. That's the story of our faith. And we've been given a blessed and a beautiful, good home. Our job is to take care of it, be responsible for it. I was listening to satellite radio yesterday, and the station I had said, "Every day is Earth Day." I think that has to be true, because every day we walk and every day we eat and drink and see and smell and listen, we encounter the blessings of God coming to us. If you're like me, you delight mostly from being outside. I'm not against a television show or a video game, but virtual reality isn't the real thing. Take a walk outside, watch the sunset, see what the moon's doing in its various phases. Smell that sweet air. Listen to the birds sing. My father pointed out once when I was talking about the cardinals and the finches in my backyard, the mourning doves that hoot, He said, you got to watch out for those blue jays. They're mean. When those blue jays show up, those other birds go running. Consider the birds of the air. Look to the lilies of the field. Tend the garden. Steward the gifts. Manage it. Protect it. The Bible starts in a garden story and it ends in a garden story. I know there's the city of the New Jerusalem and its gates don't have to lock at night because all is well. But also in Revelation 22, there's a river of the water of life and it flows from the throne of God. And it says the waters are bright and clean. And on the side of the river of life is the tree of life. And the tree of life bears abundant fruit and its leaves are for healing. The church in my the church camp in my home was not the Calvin Center, but Chrisland, named for Christ's land. It was a beautiful Appalachian valley. And in addition to the mountain laurel and the green fields and the ferns and the clear streams and the mountain canopy, there's a bald spot up there where we'd hike, and that's where the last ice age left a bunch of rocks. My grandfather used to tell the stories, that's where the bears dance at night. That's why nothing will grow there. The favorite part of that camp for me was not even the campfires and the great music of the 70s and 80s on acoustic guitar, but the hemlocks, those hemlock trees. Still my favorites. You probably know hemlocks are in trouble. North Georgia hemlocks are in danger of total extinction. There are now 13 or 14 counties in North Georgia where there is an infestation of, are you ready for this? Hemlock woolly adelgids, an invasive insect from Asia with no natural predator. So hemlock stands are dying because of the infestation of HWA. That's the bad news. Here's the good news. People have organized and people are working to fight that invasive species, which is killing off our hemlocks. If we take no action, they're going to be gone. And this isn't just true here. It's true up and down the East Coast. So there are organizations like Save Georgia's Hemlocks. Check out the website. See what you can do. If there's a hemlock you're concerned about, friends, you can act to save its life so that we don't lose these beautiful trees. If you don't remember anything else from church today, remember there's a hemlock hotline. You can call the hemlock hotline to get some help to get those trees treated. When I was up in North Georgia catching a couple of trout in the beautiful Chestertee River, I saw some hemlocks on one of your properties that was being tended and cared for because of your good gardening and tending and stewardship. The Lord is my shepherd. That means I have everything I need. Green pastures, still clean waters, abundant blessings, rest, renewal, full tables, overflowing goblets. How in the world could you receive and take in so much beauty, so much of life and its delight and diversity all around us? How could you receive that without gratitude, without a sense of responsibility? Barbara Brown Taylor, in her book, Alder in the World, says this: take off your shoes and go barefoot. Find a place outdoors, whether it's a fern, a mossy knoll for beginners, or if you're experienced, a rocky stream bed, and feel the earth under your feet. It's holy ground, she says. The clover, the slick river stones, the honeybee, the red clay, the pine bark, the black earth, those things that you press down are also pressing back, are they not? And they've been around much longer than you have, most of them. You're the new kid on the block. Let the breeze touch your upper lip and let the dew hang on that orange petal as you take notice. Stop and consider all that you've missed when you're rushing from here to there. Jesus says, consider the lilies, look to the birds. As long as you're on the earth and you know you're on the earth, that's where you're supposed to be. What's more, you have everything you need grounded in life with God. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.